Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is July 15th, 2016. And just when you thought you'd seen it all, here we go again. You know, I have traditionally started my program by saying Happy Friday, but it's difficult to be happy this Friday in the wake of the terrorist attacks. 84 dead as of right now. With a couple of dozen more people apparently on life support over in Nice. Last week, it was the slaughter of five police officers, the wounding of still others by a racist who hated white cops and white people. And we have the terror attack from a Tunisian in Nice and a seaside, very upscale town in the south of France. And even as I sit here doing my program, there is a military coup underway in Turkey. It feels as though the world is unraveling. And quite frankly, this is what happens when there's a lack of leadership. You create a vacuum. Nature abhors a vacuum. And God only knows what comes to fill the vacuum created by this disastrous Obama administration. An administration that apparently came to office determined to take America down a bunch of pegs. There's no other way of describing it, whether it was grounding the space shuttle or doing so many other things from day one, where you really had the sense that we had an administration that did not understand that the United States of America, as the so-called superpower — we don't look very super these days, perhaps there's some kryptonite somewhere — but this superpower has stepped back, and in that vacuum, we have chaos, turmoil, a lot of dead people, ISIS on the ascendancy, and we are at risk. And all this as the backdrop, as the political conventions are about to start up next week, it will be the Republicans. So there's much to consider, but I do thank you for joining me at the end of the week. There is so much to catch up on, and for those of you who are familiar with me, know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. I've been on a mission ever since the attacks of 9/11, 14 and a half, almost 15 years ago, hard to believe, to wake up our fellow Americans about the true significance of America's borders, the true significance of our immigration laws, to push back against the false and outrageous accusations that if you want your borders secured and your immigration laws enforced, that somehow you're xenophobic or racist or God knows what. Our immigration laws are completely blind about race, religion, or ethnicity. If they weren't, I could not have enforced those laws for the 30 years of my career with the old INS. It's about protecting America and Americans from criminals, from terrorists, from those with dangerous diseases, those who have no inherent right to be here. And let's make that perfectly clear. Aliens do not have an inherent right to enter our country or any other country. And when a large enough group of foreign nationals enter a country against the wishes of that country, it's called an invasion. Now, maybe our politicians are happy with the state of affairs we find ourselves in, particularly this administration and undoubtedly Ms. Clinton, who has so much to answer for. I really wanted to spend time talking about the lunacy that we witnessed over the period of a week, beginning with Bill Clinton casually stopping by for a tete-a-tete, for a little conversation with the Attorney General Loretta Lynch on her government airplane. Nothing inappropriate here, folks. Nothing to see here. Keep moving. But it has been a succession of events almost on a daily basis, a steady drumbeat of madness, lunacy, and now we add to the mix death and destruction. If you're interested to read more about what I write, because I do write for a bunch of websites, first of all, please go to my own personal website, michaelcutler.com. www.thebrownstone.net. Also, for a bunch of years, I'm proud to be associated with a wonderful bunch of folks out in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. My most recent article for them, in fact, addressed the multiple failures of the immigration system and what it means for our national security. What an apropos topic, given where we are today. I also write for The Social Contract. I write for Front Page Magazine, where I'm proud to be a columnist. And of late, I have been invited to contribute to a website known as LifeZ, L-I-F-E-Z-E-T-T-E, and they have a subsidiary website, PolyZ. I guess that's P-O-L-I-Z-E-T-T-E. It's, a twisting of the term Gazette, you know, the Daily Gazette, the various newspapers. Website started by Laura Ingram of Fox, former speechwriter for President Ronald Reagan and so forth. I'm sure you're all familiar with Laura Ingram. So I'm happy to write for her website also. But this is about providing information that the mainstream media won't discuss. Won't talk about the truth about immigration, especially where it comes to enforcing our immigration laws from within the interior. We keep on playing this game of catch-up. You can't win by having to chase your opponent. You know, a long time ago, I was trying to make the point, and I said, well, how many home runs did Muhammad Ali hit in his career? And people laughed. They said, what are you talking about? He was a boxer. He didn't hit home runs. I said, but that's right. And the point that I was making is he hit no home runs because that wasn't his game. As long as you have to play your opponent's game, you're not going to win. The trick is to make your opponent play your game. That's the way that you become victorious. On 9/11, 19 thug terrorists, barely out of their teens, inflicted more casualties on America than did the entire Japanese Navy at Pearl Harbor. Think about that. And they used airplanes as de facto cruise missiles. So we became fascinated with airplanes because, after all, they used airplanes. So that's where we put all of our eggs into that one basket. And what was that basket called? Airlines. And we wind up with the TSA. And they're largely ineffective. They spend tons of money. They employ 45,000 people. And we've all heard the horror stories, and I don't blame them. This is just an inept bureaucracy. It's a tough job. But goodness, it's outrageous. You know, the stories about the 85-year-old women sitting in wheelchairs getting, you know, searched. God knows what. Little children getting searched, 5-year-old kids. I do a lot of flying. And, in fact, if you become aware of any speaking opportunities, let me know. You can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. You can reach out to me through capsweb.org. They can contact me. And so I do a lot of flying. And I certainly don't want a window seat on a cruise missile. But I've been making this point ever since before 9/11. I did my first hearing 4.5 years before 9/11. It's not just airplanes that can be used. You turn a terrorist loose in America or any other country, it's like turning a child loose in Toys R Us with a platinum card. There are so many different ways of attacking us. We've seen it with knives, with explosives, with guns, with airplanes. And now what have we seen? Terrorists are only limited by their imagination, especially if they are determined to die along the way. And most of these Looney Tunes are willing to give up their lives. It's astonishing. It used to be that you could say, well, we can protect ourselves because if the guy goes in there and does whatever, there's no way out. Well, they have the way out. The way out is that they go as baggage after the attack is over. They have no intentions of surviving. That makes it a lot more difficult and dangerous for us. And the problem that we really face is that you have people on TV and in the media who know nothing about immigration, nothing about law enforcement, making their proclamations. Oh, the terrorists don't need to come as refugees because, hell, they can get into the country by running the border. They can get into the country by overstaying a visa. That's true. But one of the issues that most people that don't understand immigration, and that's just about everybody on television, by the way, I don't blame them. It's not that they're stupid. It's that they didn't do my job. I was paid for 30 years to enforce our immigration laws. So you learn something along the way. But what's so remarkable is that immigration has become such a cash cow for so many people that if you haven't noticed, think about this the next time you see the coverage of the story. Generally speaking, when immigration is the topic of the day, on those rare occasions, because most of the time they try to sweep it aside, don't talk about it, don't mention it, don't let anybody think about it. But when they do talk about it, who comes on to talk about it? There's talk radio hosts, pundits, political consultants. When there's military action, they bring in former commandos, retired generals, retired admirals, former Secretary of Defense. That's who talks about it. But when they talk about a cure for cancer or threats to health, they bring in public health officials and doctors and surgeons and oncologists and biochemists. When there's a discovery involving space, they bring in astronauts and astronomers and astrophysicists, but not where it's immigration. Immigration, the best you get in law enforcement is a border sheriff, as though that's the only problem we have is the Mexican border. And to this day, when I travel around the country and do a speech, there's always somebody who raises the hand and says, I have a question. Wouldn't it make sense to at least first start by securing the Mexican border? It's crazy. I actually get those questions. It's not a first. It's not a first. It needs to be done in coordination with everything else. Not one of the 9/11 terrorists ran the Mexican border. They all came through ports of entry. So if we had a million Border Patrol agents on duty for the last 20 years, 9/11 would have happened just the way it did. The Border Patrol had nothing to do with it. We have very few agents doing interior enforcement of our immigration laws. And for most people, interior enforcement means going into the jails. And by the way, I worked with Al D'Amato to create that program, the institutional hearing program, to hold deportation hearings actually in the prisons. Because the idea was that if you could hold a hearing in the prison while the inmate still had years of sentence to serve, by the time that alien finished his or her criminal sentence in jail for the crimes they committed, we could simply put them on an airplane and wave goodbye, and they wouldn't get lost out there to the greater population of the United States, because that's what we're seeing. 100,000-plus criminal aliens released from custody within the last 3 years, according to a recent House Immigration Oversight hearing, and they went out and committed more murders, more rapes, more assaults, more mayhem. If you could remove them from the United States on their last day of imprisonment, then they don't have that opportunity to disappear. Wow, it might actually work. And you see, the whole point is to make immigration not work. When they say the system is broken, the politicians broke it. And why did they break it? Because they want that cheap labor. Because they want to placate the American Immigration Lawyers Association. They want to placate the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They want to placate the banks. Placate the banks. I'll say it again. They want to placate the banks. Why? Because when illegal aliens work in the United States, whether the work they do is legal or illegal, whether it involves a girl working in a house of prostitution or a guy consummating a drug deal or a surgeon operating on a patient in a hospital, all money is green, right? So when they get the money, they wire it to some other country, and the bank gets a cut of the action. The bank is the silent partner to anybody who moves money. The bank is a moving company. They don't move furniture. They move money. And they don't care how the money was gained. They don't care about anything except their piece of the action. They don't care, and they get away with it. HSBC got hammered for its involvement with drug money, and nobody ever goes to jail. They have a little slush fund of a couple of billion dollars lying around, and when they're tapped on the shoulder and they're told, we caught you, they write a check, and business goes on, and life goes on. And for them, that's fine, is the cost of doing business. Nobody goes to jail. Too big to jail. Many articles written with that basic message, and not just HSBC, many banks. Think of how much drug money gets laundered through the banks and through real estate and through the stock market, and nobody cares. They're happy. They're making money. Never mind that we've never seen more drug addiction in America today, especially to heroin. It's so bad that they now advertise or they have commercials for people that suffer from constipation because of opioid use, which shuts down the person's intestines. So that peristaltic action, you know, that caterpillar-like motion of the intestines moving the food along till it's disposed of, it slows down or shuts down because of heroin use or the use of opioids. And so why do we have so many kids up to as young as 11 being prescribed opioids for pain? This is nuts. Makes no sense unless you don't care about people, unless all you care about is money. So when they can't afford the drugs, when their prescriptions run out, guess what's cheaper than that prescription opioid? Heroin. Heroin is not produced in the United States, so it has to be smuggled into the country. So every gram of heroin provides graphic, irrefutable evidence of a failure of border security. And we've never had more heroin pouring into the United States. So the people that make their money off of those transactions, the money moving around the world, they're happy. They're happy. The moving company's happy because that money is moving and they get their piece of the action. And meanwhile, we're importing criminals, we're importing violence, we're importing the destruction of young American lives, kids who become hooked on drugs, kids who wind up with rap sheets. President who says, oh, we got to release the nonviolent drug traffickers. On the federal level, there's no such thing. On the state, local level, yes, you get the guy that's caught with a couple of joints in his back pocket or he has three or four pills. He's a nonviolent drug offender. And maybe jail isn't the right place for that person. We've got to rethink what we're doing. But when somebody is moving tonnage, and that's generally what happens at the federal level, they generally have weapons to protect the drugs, to protect their profits. It's a violent business, very violent. And the damage done to the people is violent. I can't imagine committing a greater act of violence against somebody than hooking them on drugs. You know, it's right up there with rape. Maybe worse than rape, I don't know. This is all relative stuff. But certainly when you get somebody hooked on drugs, you're doing something to them that will alter their lives forever and always. They will never be the same. They will go through life permanently damaged. Perhaps die young, perhaps go from bright potential futures to disasters. Some people do overcome it, but at great risk and at great cost to them. It's crazy. There's nothing nonviolent about the drug trade. And you had a president who came on, and that's what I talked about last week, talking about, you know, the poverty and how the poverty is linked to racism and all these other topics. Well, the poverty is an outgrowth of the importation of more foreign workers into the United States and the number of new jobs we're creating. And then you have the problem of terrorists gaining entry into our country also, and that's what we really should be looking at tonight. The fact that we now have millions of foreign nationals living in America who have no inherent right to be here. We have no idea who they are. We don't know why they came here. We don't know what they're up to. And only one terrorist yesterday in Nice, one terrorist, turned a joyous occasion of fireworks, an evening under the stars at the beach in a beautiful part of the world in south of France, into a killing field using a truck. And here in the United States, you have politicians looking to placate the people that bribe them with campaign contributions. Oh, let's give these undocumented people driver's licenses. You have places giving illegal aliens commercial licenses so they can drive a truck. And we've known that trucks are a problem. A truck was used to bomb the World Trade Center in 1993. A truck was used to bomb that federal building, the Mirror Building, by McVeigh, the Army soldier. So we've seen trucks being used as weapons, usually as a container for a bomb. Now the truck itself became the weapon. But the potential has always been there. I keep saying the same thing. Terrorists are only limited by their imagination. There are so many different ways to kill lots of people, and a truck is yet another way. Has nothing to do with airplanes, has nothing to do with guns, although the guy did have a gun. So if we keep playing this game of catch-up, well, now we're going to look at trucks, and next week we're going to look at buses, and the week after that, what are we going to be looking at? The strategy that we need, and the strategy that will be very effective, not foolproof, this is not a perfect world, and we are not perfect creatures. But here's what we need. Number one, laws don't enforce themselves. The laws of nature are immutable. The speed of light is the speed of light because that's the law of nature. It does not depend on somebody with a badge and a summons book and a radar gun. The speed of light is established by the laws of nature. Man's laws or humankind's laws require law enforcement officers so that the laws have meaning. When you have no law enforcement officers, I don't care what the laws are that are on the books, nobody will pay attention to them. As it is, many people don't pay attention to the law. E-Verify by itself, good idea to have E-Verify, I agree with it. But if you don't have agents to go to the factories and the other venues of employment to conduct the audits, to interview the employees, E-Verify doesn't mean much. You need the agents to go into the jails. You need the agents to conduct investigation into fraud. We have about 7,000 ICE agents for the whole country, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, 7,000. More than half of them are doing customs work, and this being the political campaign, most of the rest are actually working on the campaign, beefing up the Secret Service, because they don't have enough agents during campaign season to cover everybody. So if you didn't know it, in the old days when Treasury ran Secret Service before we created DHS, that agency that I've come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender, before DHS, Secret Service was under the Treasury Department, so Treasury agents, I meant ATF, IRS, backed up the Secret Service. Now Secret Service is lodged in the Department of Homeland Security, so it's ICE agents who go out there to back up Secret Service agents. So you've got a handful of agents enforcing the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. Now, why is that important? Well, here's something you may not know. There's an organization known as the Joint Terrorism Task Force, pardon me, the JTTF, and their job is to work two types of terror cases, domestic and foreign. They look at all sorts of groups that would commit acts of terror within the borders of the United States. It's run by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. So obviously the FBI sends the greatest number of agents to work on the JTTF. But in addition to FBI agents, there are federal agents from other agencies, and they also use local and state police officers. It's a task force, and that's what the TF stands for, JTTF. Joint Terrorism Task Force, just like I was part of the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. Task forces generally are multi-agency law enforcement organizations that bring in federal, state, and local law enforcement for a common goal. Where I was, the goal was narcotics, which also, by the way, brought us into contact with terrorism on a fairly regular basis, because terrorists use drugs as a fundraising mechanism. But the Joint Terrorism Task Force is focused on terrorism. The second greatest number of agents, the second biggest contingent of agents assigned to JTTF next to the FBI, believe it or not, are ICE agents, immigration agents. What you may not know is that one of the most likely charges that you wind up charging a terrorist with, unless you catch him or her with that bomb in the middle of an attack or whatever, but very often what you wind up charging them with is immigration fraud or visa fraud. They get married just to get that green card. They get that visa by fraud, or they claim political asylum when they're not. They claim to be refugees when they're not. The Tsarnaev family, for example, should have been prosecuted. They said, we need political asylum. We're from Russia. We can't go back. If we go back, we have a credible fear that terrible things will happen. So we gave them lawful status. And as soon as we gave them lawful status, they hopped on airplanes and flew back to Russia. You think maybe they lied? And if they did lie, and if you can show they lied, and clearly that trip is prima facie evidence that they did lie, that's called fraud. That's called a felony. That's called perjury. So this is a prosecutable offense. Nobody did anything about it, because we keep ignoring the people that lie on their applications. This is very dangerous. The 9/11 Commission was so clear about this. They warned us. They said, you know, people lying on applications for visas and for immigration benefits are a threat to national security. One of my most frustrating things, and I've probably mentioned it where you've heard me before, I did my very first hearing as an expert witness back on May 20th, 1997, 4.5 years after 9/11. The hearing was specifically on visa fraud and immigration application benefit fraud. Why? Because of the two terrorist attacks carried out in the United States in 1993, 4.5 years earlier. First, we have a guy by the name of Kansi, a Pakistani national, shoots up the CIA. He used a courier truck that he had bought a partnership into as a way of getting into the parking compound at CIA headquarters in Langley. And one morning, January of 93, he shows up with an AK-47, opens fire in that parking lot, and kills two CIA officers and wounds three others. 1 month later, first bombing at the World Trade Center, Mahmoud Abu Alima, one of those terrorists, had gotten agricultural amnesty. That was the amnesty that Chuck Schumer was the architect of, even though, interestingly, Chuck did not have any farms in his district. So all about the game. You know, I had a meeting with Chucky Boy back then, and boy, he wasn't happy to see me. I had worked with Al D'Amato to get the aggravated felon law enacted in the early 80s. When I went to see Schumer, I expected the same kind of warm greeting I got from D'Amato. Boy, was I wrong. Did not want to hear about it. The meeting lasted under 15 minutes. And he unceremoniously escorted me out of his office when I said to him, "Congressman, I don't understand your fascination with farm workers. You don't have any farmers or any farms in your district." That was that. I was gone. He didn't want to hear about it. Mahmoud Abu Alima, one of the people that planted that deadly bomb in the garage of the Trade Center in 93 that killed six people, that injured over 1,000 people, got agricultural amnesty. Never worked on a farm. He just said he did. He claimed to have worked on a farm in Florida picking beans when in reality, the only thing he ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center in 93. Six dead, more than 1,000 injured, $500 million in damages inflicted on the complex. Almost brought the tower down sideways. Had that happened, I don't even want to imagine what would have happened. I don't want to imagine what the casualty count would have been or what damage would have been to Lower Manhattan. The seawall would have ruptured. Lower Manhattan would have been flooded. Canal Street, located, I guess, about a mile north of the Trade Center, might have had a real meaning to its term, Canal Street. And the Clinton administration did nothing. In fact, they implemented a program where they rushed over 1 million applications for citizenship through the process quicker than you know what goes through a goose. So immigration is a critical issue. And yet you watch TV and you listen to the nonsense that goes on and all these talking heads, oh, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. And I've heard that from members of Congress, too. I did a number of hearings about the nexus between immigration and terrorism, and then one day they wake up and they say, oh, no, Mr. Cutler, there is no connection. There is no connection, even though I was called in March of 2002 to testify at a hearing how two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, could have been granted permission to go to school. Of all things, flight school, 6 months after 9/11. So by then, the whole world knew two things about these pieces of trash. Number one, they were dead. Number two, they had been terrorists. But that didn't stop the inept and incompetent Immigration Service from giving them authorization to go to flight school. Unbelievable. So everybody was focused. They made all these promises. You can go to C-SPAN and watch that video. It's part of their permanent library. You can go to my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. We can go on, and see the video. Not a promise was kept that was made. Just more bluff, more bluster, more hot air, more BS. And the beat goes on, and the people keep dying, and that's okay. Because when Americans are killed in America, we call it collateral damage. We call it the cost of doing business. And after all, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce probably looks to that industry, the funeral home industry, and says, hey, we can drum up some business for you. That's what I think of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. What I would argue is one of the most un-American organizations in America today. The name sounds innocuous. Their goal is not. It's to flood America with as many cheap workers as possible, to flood America with as many foreign tourists as possible, to eliminate the visa requirement that is our major layer of security that could protect us if properly implemented. I testified about that program before a congressional hearing. The visa waiver program should have ended. That's something else that I would do. You have radical Islamists who live in Europe who've become citizens, who carry European passports, and the best that Congress could do, both political parties, well, we're going to have an enhancement to the visa waiver program. If somebody from a visa waiver country has been to Syria or Iraq or some other country that sponsors terrorism, they will have to provide us with a visa. Really? Yes. So that's what they said. If that person has been to one of those countries within 6 months of seeking entry into America, they will need a visa. Well, sports fans, here's the question. No one asked them, and they didn't answer, and they certainly didn't volunteer. How will you know if they've been there? Do you think Syria is stamping their passports? It's outrageous. We know that the visa waiver program is dangerous to America's national security, but the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and their Discover America partnership have applied incredible pressure and spent God knows how many millions of dollars in bribes. Yes, bribes, because to me that's what a campaign contribution is. When it's that kind of money, this isn't someone who believes in a candidate. This is someone who believes in themselves. Think about the corporations that give money to both parties, to two candidates running for the same job. If candidate A is running for mayor of some town and candidate B is running for some mayor of the same to be mayor of that same town, and you're giving money to both candidates, I don't think you could say you're doing it because you prefer one candidate over the other. You're doing it to make damn sure you have access to that politician and you can get them to do what you want. Otherwise, they know the money dries up. Same thing with members of Congress. Here's your contribution, and we want you to do what we want you to do. If a police officer stops you for speeding and you offer the cop a 50, you're probably going to wind up sporting a pair of bracelets and get a free room and board. You will be arrested because the cops, despite the vilification of Mr. Obama, tend to be honest, decent, law-abiding citizens who would not take the money. But you go to the mayor of most towns and give them a big enough campaign contribution, and they'll just raise the damn speed limit. Except that's considered business as usual, but offering a cop is a crime. How does that work out? I want someone to explain that to me. So if you really want to know what's going on within those communities in which the terrorists are hiding, you need to have many, 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 many more agents out there, because then you start to become involved in those communities. You can get people to become informants and cooperators. They become your eyes and ears. A long time ago, back in the mid-70s, when I first became an immigration agent, on a typical day, somebody or many people would show up in our offices from the FBI, from DEA, from ATF, from the city police, from the state police, from IRS, from wherever, because they were working a case and they needed to know if we had an informant in a particular ethnic immigrant community, and not just the Latino community. That's another big fat lie. I spent years investigating and arresting aliens who did not come from Latin America. Not only didn't they come from Mexico, they didn't come from Latin America. They came from Europe. I've arrested people from every country in Europe just about. I was the Marine Intelligence Officer for a couple of years. I arrested lots of Greek seamen who would jump ship. I've arrested some Italians involved with the mob. I've arrested some Israeli mobsters as well. I've arrested people that were involved with the IRA. One guy we prosecuted for possession of a firearm. People from Japan. I got an award from the Japanese government for helping them with a narcotics investigation. I've been involved in the arrest and prosecution of aliens from Africa, from Jamaica, from Panama, Canada, New Zealand, Australia. This has nothing to do with Latin America. It's, again, one of those lies. But we always had people who had their informants and they had a level of expertise in particular ethnic immigrant communities. So if there was an investigation involving an Italian mobster, we had some agents who were really up on the Italian mob. If it involved Israeli gang members and Israeli mobsters, I worked very closely with the Israeli National Police going back to, June or July of 1976. My first solo case, I tripped over a terror plot in Israel. We prevented the bombing of their oil refinery. Consequently, I had a wonderful relationship with the Israelis that lasted the balance of my career. So I certainly had access to work with the Israeli National Police. There were times I would work cooperatively, bring bureau agents or DE agents up to the Israeli consulate to get their help. And I will tell you, the Israelis gave us help like no other country. Always with a smile, always done promptly, always done willingly and completely. And what this administration has done to our relationship with Israel infuriates me. So understand what we're talking about. It's about having your eyes and ears in those communities. You arrest an illegal alien and you say to him, okay, here is your choice. We can send you back to your home country, get you on an airplane, wave goodbye to you. You want to stay here? You need to help me. We're working on an undercover case. I need you to work with us. And very often, some guy who does not want to be deported, who would rather stay in the United States, says, okay, I'll work with you. So once that person starts working with us, we can keep them here. We can give them permission to work in the United States legally. If they really hit a home run, they do major work for us, we can give them a green card. There's something known as the S visa program. It's an adjunct to the witness protection program. We can give people green cards for helping us. They can bring their families here if they do some really significant work. But the only way you're going to get people to do that is if you're out there enforcing the law. We're not doing this. This is like the lottery, folks. You got to be in it to win it. And this isn't hypothetical. I didn't do a study. I didn't read a book. For 4 years, I was the first immigration agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration in New York City. One of my key responsibilities was to work cooperatively with the DEA to cultivate informants. My authority as an immigration agent was instrumental in getting many people to cooperate with the DEA and help them with undercover investigations. And then in 91, when I was promoted to senior special agent, I was assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. I had a desk at ATF. I had a desk at the FBI, and I continued to have a desk at DEA. And again, one of my key responsibilities was to help to convince people to become cooperators if they were here illegally or if they had an immigration issue that needed to be resolved. We could help them with it, but they had to help us. You scratch my back, I scratch your back. And I was a hell of a back scratcher, let me tell you, because we had some amazing cases that came together because of the informants we could cultivate. Everyone says, let's monitor the mosques. Think how useful it would be to have people living in the Middle Eastern communities who work with us so that if some guy is walking around saying, I hate Americans, I'm going to kill Americans, and that guy comes to you and says, you know, this guy has been warning me that, you know, or telling me how he hates this country and he wants to kill people. Well, goodness, that's invaluable. Now you have someone that maybe you should be doing surveillance on. And if the guy said to someone, I'm going to take a truck and run people down, and you find out he has a commercial driver's license and he's trying to rent a truck, well, you know, you could stop it. Not foolproof. There will be some who will get through. Life is not a safe proposition. But right now, without immigration agents out on the street enforcing the laws, reaching out to those communities, you know, the other big lie, oh, if we enforce the immigration laws, you will lose community policing. Let me tell you what a big lie that is. One of the best examples of community policing you can ever possibly have is the ability for a law enforcement officer to cultivate members of a community to either become an informant or a cooperator. That's true community policing. And immigration is best at it when we're turned loose, not handcuffed. Bush did a number on us. When they created DHS, they split immigration up into a bunch of little components, made it very unwieldy, put people from customs in charge, and I don't think it was an accident. George W. Bush was a globalist, and that's why he stood shoulder to shoulder with Vicente Fox, the president of Mexico, and referred to the Minutemen as vigilantes. Vigilantes, goodness. Border Patrol agents Ramos and Compion prosecuted under Bush's watch. Wow. So, you know, it's both parties, and people say to me, oh, it's those Democrats. No, it's those politicians with a few exceptions who I have nothing but the utmost respect for. people like Senator Jeff Sessions and my good friend Lou Barletta, a congressman from Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Congressman Steve King. There's a number of guys on the Hill that really try. But most of these folks have sold us out. And I think really, truth be known, that's why all the consternation among the Republicans over Donald Trump, because he wants to secure our borders and enforce our immigration laws, and these people don't care. They don't care. They just want to placate the people that are giving them their contributions, and the hell with everybody else. Well, when you look at the carnage in France, that's the price that we may have to pay. We've already paid one hell of a price because of criminal aliens that have been turned loose on our streets. Steve King did a study because of an answer that I gave him to a question years ago, and he just spoke about it in April at a hearing about criminal aliens. But I remember the hearing. And Steve King asked me, he said, Mr. Cutler, do you know how many people lose their lives every year to criminal aliens? And I didn't have the answer, and I don't play games. But I did say to him, while I don't have that number for you, Congressman, my gut, my feeling, my hunch is that it would be a multiple of the number of people who died on 9/11. It's my understanding that he had two General Accountability Office studies done, two GAO studies done, and to his horror, at least 7,000 people per year are losing their lives. And then you've had the terror attacks. You've had the 93 attacks that I talked about. You had 9/11, Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber. Thankfully, his bomb did not detonate, but he sure tried. And when he was sentenced to life in jail, the only remorse that he expressed was the remorse that he didn't get to kill anybody. You had the Tsarnaev brothers attack the Boston Marathon. You had San Bernardino. It just keeps happening. And the United States is a cash cow for terrorist organizations as well. This goes back to the 80s, to the late 70s. People committing coupon fraud and welfare fraud and taking that money and sending it to terror groups. In the old days, it was the PLO and the PFLP. Astonishing stuff. So crime being committed to support terrorism, buildings burned to the ground so that they get the money from their arson, people killed and badly injured in the fires, and the money goes overseas to people like the late and not great, horrific Yasser Arafat. Goodbye to him. But, I mean, this has been going on for decades, for decades. But there's nothing to see here, folks. Keep moving. Immigration has nothing to do with it, folks. Immigration has nothing to do with it. Right. Dream on. Dream on. It's very frustrating to hear this kind of thing. I see we have somebody on hold. Let's see who's calling in this evening. Hello, you're speaking to Mike Cutler.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah,
who's this?
This is Ed from Orlando. How you doing? Or from Orlando area, actually.
Thank you for calling, Ed. I appreciate the call.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, it's a shame what happened yesterday, huh?
Isn't
that Tunisian terrorist, man. I mean, it's just a shame that these things are happening. But, you know, it's probably going to keep going for a while yet. I don't see it any end in sight any soon. You know?
No, and the problem that we have is that you have an administration that refuses to step up to the plate, take actions that need to be taken. You have Hillary Clinton promising to do she thinks it's better.
No,
I don't do lots worse than
but, you know, if I see the entire D.C. I call it the District of Corruption.
You're right.
I don't see anything, and I haven't seen anything come out of it in the last 100 years. It's pretty corrupt. The whole works. You know what I mean? So that's pretty much the District of Corruption, or the District of Communism, if you want to call them that. I mean, they just keep building more and more programs.
You know, I've sat at these congressional hearings. I've been a witness at.
It's not just the administration,
And I've often had the urge when I've walked out of the hearings to take a hot shower with a Brillo soap pad and a bottle of disinfectant. I mean, it's just remarkable.
Oh, I know. They don't have anything to do with the Constitution.
No, and they don't seem to care that they're getting people killed in America. I've never seen a level of betrayal that's quite this bad, I have to tell you.
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of betrayal in the world. The world's not perfect, so it doesn't surprise me that much. I mean,
But you know what?
I mean, when you look at we have 300 million people. Most people are enjoying themselves and living a good life now, better than ever. Do we have corrupt government? Yeah, but government's always been pretty corrupt. If you go back to the days of Rome, or you go back to the days, you know, or almost any government,
how
you want to go down Venezuela, you want to go to.
Sure, but how did it turn out for Rome, Ed? You know? So we've got to be very careful.
Even our fathers realize that all governments are doomed to fail, you know what I mean? Because man's fallen, and once they even said that once they start getting, you know, they put their hands in the cookie jar and pass off things for votes, and it's like pretty much doomed, man. It's, there's not much change in that. Our best bet is,
I'll tell you what I think, to hold on.
The key is
that we the people have to make them accountable, not only in the voting booth, but to make certain to reach out to their staffs, to set up meetings with these people. If they represent us, then they need to meet with us, because they can't represent what we want if they don't know what we want, and that's our responsibility.
You're right. You're right there. I mean, we have groups down here in Florida. We have Liberty First, which is basically I work with those guys, and they're up there lobbying. They're a people's lobbying group that makes sure that they talk to all the representatives in our state. Because we really need to get back first to, you know, proper thing. It's states are the ones that formed the federal government. The federal government should be living in size and first time and scope. We need to do that and then bring back our states' rights and then get rid of stupid things like we're fighting to get rid of red light cameras. We're fighting to, do away with a lot of other bullshit stuff they put on us, you know. And it's just like that's what you could do at the state level, you know what I mean?
It's at all levels. But again, if we as...
Yeah, it's at all levels. But if we had a state, if we take care of our states first, the federal government will fall in place. We got to quit taking their money and stuff.
Well, it's got to be both, because there are certain tasks that only the feds can do. Immigration enforcement, the military, and so forth. National security is the domain of the federal government. And right now, that's really, I believe, the key issue is national security.
Okay.
I appreciate the call, Ed, but thank you, and glad you're listening. I hope the weather's good down there in Florida.
Yeah, it is, man. And it's a little hot, but we're surviving. But anyways,
what part of Florida are you from? Did you say Orlando?
Yeah, north of Orlando.
Okay. All right, thank you. Have a good one, man.
Call.
Have a good weekend.
All right.
Well, that was Ed from Orlando. Look, what I had said to Ed is really what I would say to all of you out there. Please understand that you have a responsibility to your families, to yourself, to your children, to your grandchildren, to be involved. You know, government isn't exciting. It's not like going to a football game. It's not like going to a baseball game. But this is where the actions are taking place that impact what happens to our country, and what happens to our country ultimately is what happens to us. We've got to make certain that the government puts American citizens first, not corporations. And it's both political parties. I'm registered as a Democrat. I've always voted as an independent because I think both parties are as corrupt as they come. They're criminal organizations. All they worry about is gathering more campaign contributions and more political leverage because there's an agenda. The agenda should be the American people. Politicians know they can't be a slave to two masters. So they have to toe the line for their leadership or else. But very often the leadership does not want what's in the best interests of we the people. And that's where we the people come in. We need to make them accountable. And that's why when you hear the politicians saying, well, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism, this is absolutely astonishing. This is on page 54 of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And this was the chapter called Terrorist Travel Tactics by Plot. Let me just read these couple sentences to you. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred, these conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports. We're talking about the immigration system here, folks. And in so doing, they relied on a wide variety of fraudulent documents, on aliases, and on government corruption. Because terrorist operations were not suicide missions in the early to mid-1990s, once in the United States, terrorists and their supporters tried to get legal immigration status that would permit them to remain here, primarily by committing serial or repeated immigration fraud, by claiming political asylum, and by marrying Americans. Now, I want you to think about all those politicians from both parties. Oh, we can't deport 11 million. Well, it's probably 30 or 40 million. So the only thing we can do is give them legal status. And what does the 9/11 Commission talk about? That was exactly the tactic used by the terrorists to get involved in fraud marriages, to find some way of getting a green card to hide in plain sight. And then this paragraph goes on and says, many of these tactics would remain largely unchanged and undetected throughout the 1990s and up to the 9/11 attack. And then it says this, and this is the key issue. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. It would remain largely unknown since no agency of the U.S. government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. That's the 9/11 Commission staff. These are the lawyers and the federal agents that were assigned to work with the commission. So the key issue here is what? The way they entered at airports, the use of documents, the use of immigration fraud, the lack of enforcing our immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. There was nothing here about the Mexican border. They did say one thing, though. That first sentence. Although there's evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred, they ran the borders. And they weren't just talking about 9/11. These were other attacks. They looked at 94 terrorists altogether, by the way, not just the 19. These conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system. Think how much easier you're making it for terrorists to subvert the legal entry system when there's a visa waiver program where you don't even need a visa to come here. If we really want to get serious about the threats that America faces today, ladies and gentlemen, it's not just the Mexican border. We've got to secure that border. No argument from me. I don't want someone getting all excited saying, oh, that guy Cutler's nuts. He said we don't. No, we've got to do that. But if that's all we do, we will fail. I promise you we will fail, just like we've been failing. Meaningful interior enforcement. We need more judges. Right now you've got fewer than 300 immigration judges for the entire country. An alien who is arrested by an immigration agent will likely not see an immigration judge for 2 years. At least that's when they get the appointment. And what do you think happens by the time the appointment rolls around? They're not keeping them in custody for 2 years. They serve them with their papers and they say, hasta la vista, we'll see you in 2 years. And they fail to show up, and guess what happens? Then we go look for them all over again. So basically anybody who can get past that border, whether it's by running the border, whether it's by coming into the airport and saying they're going to stay for 6 months or 3 months or a year, whatever the visa stipulation is, depending on what visa they have, it's meaningless. This is the equivalent of hanging up speed signs on a highway and having nobody out there with a radar gun or a summons book. Who in the world is going to pay attention? You know, interesting point to this issue. After 9/11, most of the New York City Police Department had their police officers, and we have 35,000 cops in New York. Many of them were involved in Lower Manhattan, searching what they called the pile, the debris field. Many of them got sick doing it. Federal agents did it. Lots of people did this. Firefighters, first responders. It was a nightmare. And they also had to move the rubble out of the way. So there were lots of police officers in Lower Manhattan, and suddenly nobody was patrolling the highways. The Belt Parkway that goes all the way around Brooklyn and Queens, if you're familiar with the greater New York area, became a speedway. It's a bumpy road. It's narrow lanes, and people were driving 90 miles an hour. The posted speed limit is 50. Why do you think they were driving 90 miles an hour? You would normally never see this because everybody knew there were no cops out there. And then one morning I was on the highway, and everyone's driving relatively normally, and I was very surprised at what I saw. This had never happened before because New York City cops were busy in Lower Manhattan. State police were setting up radar units all along the Belt Parkway. And as soon as the motorists saw the radar units, they slowed down and they started to drive the way they should have been driving all along. Why? Because when they saw that state police officer in that unit, in that marked unit, they knew that if they speeded, they were going to get caught. The game was over. If you start to deport illegal aliens, you will discourage people from coming here. You know, I testified before a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on immigration a couple of years back, and I said that the policies of this administration in particular, in essence, had fired the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens from around the world. And for these folks, the finish line was the border of the United States. The threat level is high, but the threat level doesn't go up when there's another attack. We say it goes up. That's as dopey as it gets. See, it makes sense that when the weather forecast is for a blizzard, that they call in all the sanitation workers who drive the plows and drive the salt spreaders because we know there's a storm coming. When there's a terrorist attack overseas and we suddenly flood the airports with police officers and dogs and long guns and all this other business, it's kabuki theater. Because the fact that Paris or France or Nice or some other place, Brussels, was attacked in Belgium doesn't necessarily mean that the threat has gotten more or less in the United States unless there's specific information. But this is about showmanship. Oh, the American people are nervous, so we have to put on a dog and pony show to convince them that everything is under control. In reality, it's not under control. In reality, we don't know who's here. We don't know what they're up to. We don't know who is sitting in a basement right now putting together, God forbid, an explosive device or plotting the next attack somewhere in the United States. We're vulnerable. And as we've seen between San Bernardino and all the other attacks, it's not just the big cities that are at risk. It's not just New York. It's not just Washington, D.C. Years ago, I had a reporter call me up, not realize I was a New Yorker, and said some really stupid things. Well, you know, the towers came down in New York, but I'm in Ohio, and I got angry, and I will spare you the language. But I did a hearing a couple of months later for John Hostetler over at the Immigration Subcommittee in the House. This was about 12 years ago, or somewhere around there. And I said, you know, before the hearing, I asked him if he could have a map created of the United States with dots on the map to show where the victims of 9/11 came from. And he did it, and they posted it in a prominent place, I think under the rotunda, for something like 6 months. And at that hearing, I insisted that they make that map an exhibit to the hearing. And I made the statement that no American city is safe if any American city is attacked. Our immigration laws are our first and last line of defense. When Hillary Clinton can talk about providing millions of people with lawful status, the damage that this would do to America's national security would be irreparable. It would destroy wages for the middle class. It would make certain that the poor stay poor. I can't see any good news coming out of a massive amnesty program. But that's who she is, and that's what she's about. And again, I'm registered as a Democrat. We need to be Americans first. We need to understand the way we're being hoodwinked by these politicians. And we need to stand up to them. We need to contact them. We need to let them know that we're not as stupid as they hope we are. I appreciate your visiting with me for this hour at the end of the week. I hope next week we have a better week. But meanwhile, please go to capsweb.org. Go to Front Page Magazine, go to the Social Contract, go to Life Zet, and finally, please visit michaelcutler.net. Again, I thank you for visiting with me. Please get involved in government, folks. I want you to remember, never forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next weekend. Enjoy the weekend. Stay safe. Good night, everybody.